The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Man, we have a powerhouse lineup for this month. This week we have Lance Like, the Like Law Group. Of course, he's been mentioned on the show literally every single show for, we just talked about that, maybe 15 years. We're going to be talking about what estate planning means. We're going to talk about elder care laws and the moving target that it is. And also, would you qualify for those VA benefits that you hear him talk about on his radio ads as well? So Lance is live in the studio with me today. But before we get to all of that, let's talk about some of the things that happened last week and how it trickled over into this week. Of course, last week we had rising bond yields and a fear of a government shutdown, which we still have that fear. In fact, I'm pretty sure we're going to shut it down for a little bit. And don't worry about it. It happened before. I remember back in the Clinton administration, it shut down for a while. And you know what? Some good came out of it. So I'm not saying I want it to shut down necessarily, but sometimes you need a recalibration of your thoughts and processes and all your wants and needs and all that. So they'll get it hammered out. They always do. They're not going to default on the debt, so don't sweat it over that either. We never have and we never will. As long as we keep that printing press alive, which we have control of it as the reserve currency, and hopefully we do, at least until I'm dead. The Dow Jones Industrial, NASDAQ, all of them went down last week with all that was going on. So what's happened is sentiment has taken a decidedly negative turn, and it happened last week on a dime, and that's the way it normally happens. Up, 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 up. We've had a year that didn't make any sense. We had high interest rates. We had low volatility. We had high multiples we were paying for stocks. None of it made any sense. We've been saying that the entire year, and finally, the market's like, okay, we're gonna pivot and go the other way. What's interesting, and the Fed has been very, very transparent in their idea of where they want to go, where they need to be. But for some reason, the market and the investors that run the daggum thing, which are big institutional investors for the most part, they were caught off guard by the Fed signaling another potential rate hike this year. It upended hopes that the Fed might finish its current rate hike cycle. Sorry about that. That's a mouthful. So anyway, stocks declined sharply following their meeting announcement and continue to fall as bond yields spiked. I will tell you this, right now, anytime you get close to a shutdown or a, quote, default, people worried about it, you can go out and buy some pretty sweet yields right now, and that's going to continue up until the government either makes a deal or shuts down. If it shuts down, that's the time to push it in on those bonds, because as soon as they get a deal, even if it's a temporary deal, we typically see those prices go up on bonds, yields go down. So anyway, the 10-year hit 4.48 on Thursday, touching its highest point in more than 15 years. I was looking to buy a couple pieces of real estate, and I kind of swore to myself I wouldn't with these high interest rates. So I emailed my banker and said, hey, you know, if I was to buy these two condos, what kind of rate will I be looking at? They go 7.75 at best, and you might want to pro forma it at 8. I'm like, geez, well, that's going to make it hard to make those numbers work. So I'm like, all right, no thank you. And I think that's really happening, you know, across the entire United States for sure. Well, stocks also reacted to the news that the House of Representatives went into recess on Thursday. That increased the prospect of the shutdown that is looming. The sell-off cooled on Friday, adding only incrementally to the week's losses. And then we started this week off a little bit rough. And here on a Thursday, I think we're starting to digest some of this information. We had consumer confidence that went down on Tuesday. We had durable good orders. We had jobless claims and GDP reports today on Thursday. And then tomorrow on Friday, if you're listening on Saturday, it was yesterday, personal income outlays, which really doesn't tell us a lot. And we still have earnings coming in. We've got some more big boys coming in this week. And then we'll see how it rolls from there. But September has historically been a rotten month. And I hate making investment decisions based on the calendar, but it has been. And usually the last few days of September, we typically get a bounce. If you look at the last 50 years, you can go back and see some trends. Don't know exactly why. The answer that I've been given is window dressing. That we get a lot of money flowing into the third quarter, buying the things that the fund managers have to report to, and it says, oh no, I've owned this. I haven't owned this stinker. I'm selling and I'm buying. So we'll see how it all shakes out as the year unfolds. All right, this segment, of course, brought to you by Unrivaled Electric. Tim and the gang want to be your electrician like they are mine. Man, they can do solar arrays with their solar panels, generators like mine. Get one, man. The Generac generator, dude, it just runs like a top. Like I told you last week, 4 days in Unionville at the Lake Lemon House when the 4th of July storm came through. Also, Kenny Bland Auctions, they're your full service auction service. I just got outbid on something and just popped through on my phone. What's cool is you go, put a bid in, put what your maximum bid is, and that bid is, and then basically it goes up. And if it hits it or someone goes over you, it alerts you, and you can go back in and reset your bid if you want to. But yeah, visit them. They got a great auction going on right now. Visit them at KennyBlandAuctions.com. My good friend Dirk and Nikki support him. And then finally, I was going to have him read this, but I'll read it because I'm used to it. I can do it by memory. I actually did it when I was calling into the radio show one time, and they're like, hey, you need to read your spots. And I'm like, okay, well, this is brought to you by Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. I closed my eyes when I said that just to prove to you, Lance, that I could do it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the great Lance Like of the Like Law Group is here live in studio. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We're going to cover as much as we possibly can today while we have Lance in the hot seat. Lance, welcome to the show. It's been a while.
Thanks, David. Yeah, it's been a few years.
Been a few years. You're always on my radar. But, you know, we went through that stinking COVID thing in 2020. We went through 2021 where I didn't hardly have any guests. And then 2022 came along, and I had some guests, but not a lot of guests, not for COVID reasons, just time reasons, trying to book things. And then good old Jim Inman Jr. came back to work at our office, and he started booking them. And you were one of the first people to say, reach out to Lance because we need to have estate planning back on the show. People always enjoy and learn a lot from what you have to say. Tom Bunger's been on before. But the reason I think Lance, listen, this is funny because Lance and I started in practice about the same time. I started in 94. What year did you start?
Well, I was in Colorado for 3 years, but I came back to Bloomington in 93.
93, which is when we met back in 1994, three or four. And, you know, what's interesting is I was, you know, 20-some years old, and I had no idea that 30 years later, nearly, I would be 53 years old, what I think a pretty knowledgeable person in the form of investments and retirement planning and estate planning and taxes and all that kind of good stuff. And there would be over 11,500 people a day turning 65 in America. And Lance, you're kind of in the same boat. You set yourself up early on as being sort of the expert in estate planning and elder care. And here we sit with all these years of experience, and the demographics are rolling right through, and it's keeping us darn busy. It's just one of those things that I couldn't predict. I'm sure you wouldn't have predicted it either.
No, our calendar is filled up. We're still taking new clients, though. But
so are we.
Yeah, that's our demographic. We help people of all ages, but we do have a lot of people that are, 60 years and up.
So one of the things I've always said, if you're worried about not knowing much about what your parents have going on, first of all, talk to them earlier than later, because it's really, really hard when you're in that emergency panic mode. And if you don't know what's going on, I've always said, use this term. Hey, Mom, Dad, I'm thinking about going to see Lance Like and getting some of my estate plan in order. Just need some advice. What did you guys do? What did you and Mama do? And that will open up the can of worms that you might need to know. They might say, you know what, we've done nothing. And you're like, nothing? Well, listen, guys, there's a lot of aspects to this. Some of it is people don't even want to do it because they think, oh, if I do it, I'm going to die. That's not the case. There's nothing correlated to visiting Lance at his office and then you croaking. There's no correlation to that as far as I know. So when we talk about who needs an estate plan, really it's everyone. But one of the things I thought we would do, Lance, is talk more about living documents first, which tend to be super important, especially when you need them, and then the documents that you would need once you're gone. And then one thing I wanted to mention when we get into some of the living documents is what about your older kids that are over 18 when they mom can't go back to the doctor's room anymore. So Lance, let's talk about some of those living documents that are so important to have and why it's so important to have them updated.
Yeah. So some of the basics, kind of the foundational planning that we do for everybody. One is a healthcare advance directive, and you know that's really important to make sure that the people that the client wants to be able to make healthcare decisions for them are legally able to do that. And we counsel our clients about the pros and cons of naming multiple people, because we have questions all the time. Well, can I just name all of my kids as co-equals? And the answer is yes, but there's downsides to that. So perhaps they can't get along, especially on an end-of-life decision. And so I'll counsel clients just to make sure that they're comfortable with that, because it may not be in the best interest to name all the kids, you know, as co-equals. And, you know, another foundational document would be what's called a general durable power of attorney. It could also be referred to as a financial power of attorney. And the importance of that is to avoid a court guardianship. Some people call it a living probate, but to avoid a court proceeding if the person becomes incapacitated. So the power of attorney document can name a trusted individual to be able to handle, you know, the client's assets, pay their bills, make investment decisions, handle anything related to their financial or real estate matters, again, without involving a court or a judge.
And I know, because we do retirement accounts all the time, there has to be a specific statute that's underneath regarding IRAs and retirement accounts. And some of these that I've been pulling out, they're old, don't have that statute. It just says all banking and investment stuff. So I don't know what year that became a thing, but that's something that can be a huge deal, because most people, that's their biggest asset is a retirement account. And then if you can't deal with your stuff and someone else has to, and the custodian says, nope, we can't use this power of attorney. And that's why I'm always telling people, with your bank, with your investment firm, have your power of attorney, have them submit it, get it approved, because sometimes we run into where they don't get approved for some unobvious reason.
Right. And these documents can always be updated, but if the person has become disabled, it's too late. And when I talk about disability, it's really a mental disability, so mental incapacity, not a physical disability.
Well, one thing that, you know, we talked about for years in the show, and just from personal experience, and you've obviously witnessed it, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, is that you can either just give someone your power of attorney, say, hey, you've got it, no strings attached, or you can have a springing power of attorney that springs into action when I can't do this or I can't do that, and someone has to certify it. Personally, if you're going to give your power of attorney to someone, just give it to them, because you trust them. For instance, when my father-in-law, who you helped us get on VA benefits when he was when he had Alzheimer's, he, you know, when the day that he got lost was the day we needed it, and we didn't want to screw around with getting it certified that he was this or that. We just needed it. So I don't know. I know everyone has a different opinion on that, and some people are guarded about giving a POA, a power of attorney, away now to someone. But you know, if you trust them, you trust them, especially if it's like your kids.
Right. You obviously want to choose somebody that you trust, because there's not necessarily any, you know, there's not like a power of attorney policeman that's watching over this. So
Right. You
got to choose someone you trust. But I agree, you know, it makes it easier if the document just simply says it's effective upon incapacity. So my dad, for example, he's 91 and he's still mentally competent, but he just doesn't want to handle stuff anymore. So The power of attorney he executed has myself, and in my family's case, it actually has all my siblings, and any one of us could handle things for him. So it's myself and my older brother that are doing most of it, but you know, my dad legally could. And so if he had a springing power of attorney that you talked about, we wouldn't be able to do that for him unless we had a doctor's statement of incapacity. So again, you know, that's part of the counseling there's pros and cons each way, and so that's part of what the client needs to understand.
I was in Canada, and something came up where a real estate transaction had, it was like all of a sudden emergency, it has to close today or tomorrow. I'm in Canada. We have limited cell service, so I'm trying to get through to my wife, go here, get the power of attorney, send it to Title Plus, and close this transaction. And, you know, of course, she has power of attorney. She can do anything she wants. So, and it worked. So they gave it, and we closed the transaction. It was over.
Well, I can tell you a good story in my own case.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Whenever my wife and I were buying our current house 21 years ago, we set the closing for about a week after our youngest son was supposed to be born. And, of course, he decided he didn't want to make his appearance. And so the day before we were supposed to close, we're going to the doctors, and they said, we need to schedule an induction. What are you guys doing tomorrow? And my wife and I were like, well, we're closing on our new house. And so the doctor said, what time is that? And we said it was in the morning. They said, okay, show up at the hospital in the afternoon, and we'll get started. So, of course, my wife went into labor, and our son was born that night. So the next day, I showed up at closing without my wife, but with her power of attorney, so I could handle the closing. So she wasn't incapacitated. She was only unavailable. But if that document would have said it only sprung into effect upon her incapacity, I couldn't have dealt with it.
Right. Another important thing, folks, no one thinks about this. I bring it up every time I talk about power of attorney. Get a power of attorney and a healthcare rep appointment on your adult children, your young adult children. My son's 22. Basically, he's an adult, and he's not a dependent any longer. We have one for him. And where that came up was a friend of mine had a son out in California, got a bad car wreck, and his dad was trying to get information with all the silly HIPAA rules. Not all of them are silly, but a lot of them are. He couldn't get any information. He didn't have power attorney to deal with his bank account and nothing. So I'm always encouraging people. I know it seems, you know, like out there a little bit, but yeah, get a power of attorney so you can do financial things for your young kids that are maybe unmarried, and make sure appointment of healthcare rep. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about what a will means, what is actually direct when you die. We're going to also talk about trust, who needs a trust, who should consider a trust, what's the pros and cons of having just a will or a trust, or even something called a will that's created, or trust is created by my will when I die. We'll be right back. All of this and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Lance Like is in the house. Estate planning attorney, elder care law specialist. You hear his ads all the time on the radio. And like he said, yes, their appointments book is full, but they are taking new folks. And He's the only person in town that comes to mind, really, that immediately, I mean, there's other people that do this kind of work, but Lance has done such a great job positioning himself as someone that knows how to handle this and handle it correctly. So another thing when I talk with people, they say, oh, I have a will. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, it means that everything goes to these people here. Oh, okay, well, what does your beneficiary form say on your IRA account? Oh, I just left it all in my oldest. He's going to divide it up. I hear that kind of stuff. I'm like, no. We got to fix this problem. So you have a will. You have a power of attorney, healthcare representative. You have a living will that says, hey, if I'm being kept alive by artificial means, don't give me hydration and nutrition, and I'm willing to go off in the sunset. But, Lance, when it comes to a will, a lot of people don't understand what actually that even means.
Right, and you know, as you mentioned, the beneficiary forms for many people are going to be as important, if not more so, than what their will is. And so a will only controls the assets the person has in that they own that's in their name alone without a beneficiary designation. So those are considered probate assets.
Right.
So when a person dies, if they have an account in their name alone with no beneficiary, it is controlled by their will if they have one.
So if you have a joint account, like at the bank, joint with rights of survivorship, boom, goes to your wife, goes to whoever. Pay on death, transfer on death, beneficiary, all that's direct transfer. Only things that say David Hayes, only David Hayes. That's why the will's in place, is to catch those things.
Correct. And sometimes people come in and, you know, they talk about they want their assets to go, let's say, equally to their kids. But yet when I talk to them, they've got one child, like you had mentioned, as the beneficiary on certain accounts, or they've got accounts in joint name. And when I asked them, they were like, well, that's just so if something happens to me, they'll take care of it. I'm like, well, do you understand that legally they don't have to share it with the other kids? Oh, they'll share it with them is what they say. Well, you and I have seen that doesn't happen.
Trust. So, of course, people are, well, do I need a trust? Should I get a trust? And I'm always like, well, I mean, what's the purpose of it? What are you wanting a trust for? I don't know. My neighbor has one. My mom had one. It made things kind of easy. You know, it doesn't go through probate, but neither does, you know, a beneficiary on an IRA or life insurance or an annuity or transfer on death, pay on death. And you can pretty much put a TOD, transfer on death, on just about anything, including real estate. So a lot of it can be a probate-free estate just by account registration. But there are some really good reasons to have a trust. So talk about a trust, what a trust is, and why someone might want to consider one.
So a trust, and there's all kinds of different types of trust, but primarily we're talking about what's referred to as a revocable living trust. And that is a trust that you set up during your life, and if you fund it, and this is the key, if you put assets into the trust, then at the person's death, it avoids the court probate process. But some of the benefits, one is it's a private document, unlike a will that has to get submitted to the court. Number two, if you have property, real estate outside of Indiana, let's say where you live, you can avoid multiple probates. So let's say you have a property in Florida, you can put that house in Florida into the trust and it avoids a probate in Florida. And then the trust contains the provisions where you want your assets to go at your death.
And how they go.
And how they go. So whether it's outright or if you've got minor children, some protective trust structure, and even for adult children that you feel are capable of managing the money, there's benefits that the assets could drop down into a trust for them that provides better asset and divorce protection for that inherited money.
That's probably the big one I see is divorce protection, right? It gets dropped into the trust, and then it's for the benefit of this person or maybe their children. And in the case of divorce, it can somewhat insulate that as well. So when you talk about trust, a lot of times, you know, you have a child that's addicted to drugs, or you have a special needs child that could be on assistance or something like that. Just talk briefly about those types of situations, how you've seen those handled.
Okay. So those types of trust, so we're talking about after the client passes away,
right,
how their children inherit the money. And these trusts, not to confuse things too much, but can be created within a will, as you had mentioned previously, or they can be part of this revocable living trust. But regardless, it can be set up to manage that money. You put whether it's another trusted individual to manage the money or a corporate fiduciary for like a minor child, or as you mentioned, for someone that has drug or alcohol issues and you're afraid they're going to squander the money. For a special needs individual, there can be special provisions so that they are continue to be eligible for any government benefits that they would be entitled to, but yet the assets are there in the trust for their benefit. And then, as I mentioned before, even for people like you and I, hopefully we're fairly responsible, but maybe there's a benefit that our inheritance goes into a trust so that if we ever got sued by a creditor or went through a divorce, that inheritance is better protected.
We definitely see people with more and larger assets doing trust than folks that have smaller assets. You mentioned squandering things away. I'm reminded of this funny story. Ed Slott tells it, and I can say it on the air, I know, and it's just funny. So this older guy was doing some planning, and Ed was involved, and you know who Ed is. And Ed's like, you really need to do some of this planning so that your kids get this money easily without a bunch of taxes and blah, da, 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 da. And he kept saying, he said, otherwise, a bunch of money's going to be paid in taxes and it's all going to go to this, all going to go to the government. But if we do this, it can be done and tax-free and all this kind of stuff. And the old guy just kept saying, you know what? Those kids, they're just going to piss all of it away anyway. And he's like, but you need to do it. And he goes, they're just going to piss it away. And then Ed says to him, if it's either going to them or the government, pick your pisser. Which one is it? Because either way, evidently, it's going to be pissed away. But no, it's a concern for people. My son's 22. If something happened to me right now and my wife, yeah, I mean, we would have to have some major things in place. And you've helped us do that. One of the things that we've done also is we have elected a trustee who would handle the money. But we also hired a trust protector, someone that could hire or fire someone. So I have my good friend George, who runs a roofing company, who's hired and fired about 300 or 400 people in his lifetime. I'm like, he'll be good at this. He'll be able to put the hammer down. The other thing to be cautious of is that you've talked about a professional custodian, like a bank trust department. They generally won't take these on unless they're at least $1 million. I mean, I've got one relationship that I can do at $500,000. A lot of times they want to manage the assets. So if you have a good relationship with an advisor like our firm, you can say, I want them to be the financial advisor. I want them to handle the money. I want them to handle the trust stuff. And I need a trust protector that can fire me and fire them and find someone else to take care of it. So there's a lot to this, folks. You don't want to go on to, you know, legal.com and try to do this yourself. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into something that everybody has on their mind when it comes to aging and nursing homes and assisted living and all of that. We'll get into VA benefits, who's eligible, how that works as well. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. All right, we're going to get right into the elder care discussion. So my situation, my family worked like this. So my wife's mom died when we first got married. So we did not deal with that. We dealt with other things, right? Ovarian cancer and whatnot. Then her dad was alone. He retired from the county. And, you know, memory started slipping, you know, repeating and doing the things that we all know what happens. And then eventually, you know, got to the point where he got lost and we had to jump right in. I always tell people that we knew the day was coming. We just didn't know today was the day. We were always out of town when something would happen. So at that point, our goal was to keep him at home. And we did. You know, he was able to have caregivers, you know, during the day, get him to bed. He was fine until he wasn't. And then we had to have 24-hour care. What we did was he exhausted all of his funds within really a year and a half. Didn't take very long. He didn't have a ton of money. But when you have 24-hour care in a home, and you are paying still the taxes and the insurance and the upkeep and the utilities, it cost us, and this was back in, you know, 16, 17, 18 era, about, you know, $125,000 to $130,000 a year with caregiving and all that. So for a guy that worked at the county, yeah, it didn't take long for him to chew that up. He had a pension. He had Social Security. And we're like, we're out of money. So before that actually happened, we contacted Lance. Lance, I hear about these VA benefits that are available. He was a Korean War guy. How do we get this thing done? Well, Lance warned us, well, you have to do it on your own. I don't know if it's the same way, but I can tell you how to do it. I don't know if it's the same way or not. But let's get this set up, that set up, whatever set up. And we were able to get him on a VA benefit. I think they call it aid in attendance. And because of his expenses and what he had coming in, he got the maximum benefit. I want to say it was like $3,500 a month at the time. I don't know what it is now. So we were right at the last week of his life when it was impossible for him to stay at home anymore. And we were going to have to move him into a facility. But he actually ended up dying at home. The other thing we did, because Misty and I funded a good chunk of his care, because that didn't cover it. What he had coming in the VA benefit, we were still about $3,000 to $5,000 a month short. So what we did was we basically kept his house in his name, but we put a big mortgage on it as a lien holder. And so we knew that, you know, the house would come to us after that. And that's what happened. We basically put a big mortgage on it, funded his care. And, you know, he died at home. So we never had to go to the nursing home. So there's a lot there. But I'm just telling people that you don't walk from the day you need some care directly into a nursing home. You typically go through a progression of stages, whether it's assisted living to skilled care, whether it's your home and caregivers, assisted living, skilled care. Lance, you got a lot there to talk about. I'm just going to shut up and let you go from here.
Well, one of the important things I think to emphasize is that for elderly people, sometimes the most important estate planning document they may have is actually the power of attorney. And there are some special provisions that need to be included that's not often in there that we've seen, even if other attorneys have prepared this, because they're just not familiar with Medicaid and VA benefits. So there's some special powers that really need to be in there. And obviously now's the time for people to get that done while they are still competent to do that. But yeah, there are two primary programs when we're talking about government programs to help people get some financial help to pay for assistance, whether at home or in a facility, and that's the VA benefits and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. So VA benefits, again, you have to have served or your spouse had to have served during a conflict or wartime, and they can go to the VA website and I think figure out when those time periods were. Is that correct?
Right, and I've got that here in front of me.
Okay,
but yes, they're special, but you know, for you know, there may be still a few World War II vets out there. So if they serve from December 7th, 1941 through December 31, 1946, they would be eligible. And then the Korean War era is June 27th, 1950 to January 31, 1955. And then when we jump to Vietnam, it has to be service between August 5th, 1964 to May 7th, 1975, but then there's special dates if they were actually in Vietnam. So to qualify for a VA benefit, a person had to serve during those, what the VA calls a period of war. They don't necessarily have to be overseas, but they have to be in the military during that period of time. And actually, it's just one day during that. They had to serve on active duty for 90 days.
Yeah.
And one of those days has to be within that time frame. So again, you know, I've had people come in my office and they were active military, but they fall outside of that. So they can't get VA
the discharge papers, DD-214 or something like that.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
We couldn't find my father-in-law, Rodney, and when we went to try to get one from the VA, I guess the records burn up in some fire or something. I don't even remember.
There was, and I don't know the whole story, but there was a big, you know, facility in, I believe, St. Louis, and there was a huge fire at one point in time, and many of those records burned up before they were digitized and all of that.
So we had to prove that his income was less than his expenses. At the time, there wasn't really an asset requirement. He only had about $30,000 when we finally applied. Is there an amount of money that a person can't have to qualify for that, those VA benefits?
So now they actually have a set number, and I failed to bring that with me.
It's about
100, let's say 140, 150,000. But there are some assets like the home that don't count against that. But if somebody had investments, you know, savings that exceed that, they would be ineligible currently, but there may be things that planning that could be done to bring those assets down.
Let's talk about Medicaid now. And folks, the purpose of this is for you to be aware of things you need to do now, things that are available to you potentially in the future, mainly for your parents, probably your grandparents. Medicaid, in the years and years I've been around, Medicaid has been such a moving target on how to qualify, how much you can have, all that kind of stuff. There's income requirements, there's asset requirements, all kinds of things to get Medicaid eligible. Just walk us just through what that process actually looks like, and what are some things a person could do ahead of time, like maybe doing some gifting ahead of time or something, to get themselves Medicaid ready, if that's the path that we're on.
So first of all, just for the listeners, the bottom line is, with appropriate advice, there are legal strategies that if we have a married couple and one spouse needs nursing home care, we can protect virtually everything they have. With a single person, rule of thumb is we can usually protect about half, if not more, of the assets. But before someone gets to that stage where they can't stay at home and they need nursing home care, they need to do some basic estate planning like we've kind of already talked about. One of the most important things is that power of attorney. And I do have several clients that we are looking at doing, you know, they're healthy right now, but maybe they're in their 70s And we're setting up a plan that, you know, is in essence a five-year plan, because Medicaid has a five-year look-back period that if there have been any gifts or transfers 5 years prior to applying for Medicaid, that will cause a penalty or waiting period. That doesn't mean even if you have made gifts that you have to wait 5 years. It's just that we have to take that into account. So there are special strategies we could set up well in advance of needing any kind of nursing home care to ultimately protect assets, protect farmland, and those assets could be protected for the benefit, primarily for the, ultimately for the benefit of the family, the kids.
Right. So the five-year look back, that's confusing to people as well, because it's really more like a monthly penalty, right? If I gave away, you know, a bunch of money and 3 years later, I'm now needing to try to apply for this, I've got a 2 year or 24 month penalty.
Well, possibly, but maybe not. So the look, think of the look back is this is what you have to disclose to Medicaid. So you have to disclose any prior transfers 5 years from the date you're applying for Medicaid. But the penalty period, as far as if you have made any gifts, is a mathematical calculation, and it basically is for, under the current numbers, for about every $7,500 that you have gifted within the past 5 years, there'll be a one-month waiting period.
Gotcha.
So if somebody gave away $75,000 and then 2 years later is applying for Medicaid, there will be a waiting, if they otherwise qualify, there'll still be another waiting period of 10 more months based on that $75,000 gift.
Do you see the recapture from Medicaid ever, where people, you know, die and they, you know, the house was, you know, technically a protected asset because the other spouse was still living there, and then they actually do recapture the proceeds from sales? Yeah,
Medicaid is getting more aggressive. We had one.
Well, heck, they're broke. That's why.
we had one case where, you know, the gentleman passed away, and we opened, you know, he had a home and some other assets, and we opened a probate estate, you know, to deal with the assets, and Medicaid filed a lien, filed a claim, I should say, and the children didn't know what it was all about. Well, it turns out that several years ago, he had been in, you know, in rehab, and his Medicare days ran out, and Medicaid started paying for his care, and so they had a claim, and they didn't, you know, so they're getting more aggressive about filing claims in estates.
Let's take a quick break, come back, and start to wrap up the show. I'm going to talk about insurance a little bit, because there is long-term care insurance. There's a lot of creative things the insurance industry has come up with that can help you have some money to bridge a gap, to do some planning, and it works really, really well. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. In Indiana, we have something called an asset protection policy, where you can buy long-term care insurance and have total asset protection. You could have partial asset protection. All that means is that if you qualify, you can protect a portion or all of your assets. It's funny because those were out in the 90s, I think, and I'm starting to see some of those kick in now, and it's crazy. It's one of those things that people have a hard time buying. Back then, they underpriced it. They had price increases. People had to either let them go or freeze their benefits. Hardly anyone, at least in my practice, buys traditional long-term care insurance, because they think of it this way. Like, that's a lot of money to put away. Now, if you ever needed it and you used it, it'd be the best investment you ever made, trust me. But a lot of people are like, is there another way? Well, yeah, there's other ways. There's products you can put money in, say $100,000, and it might give you $300,000 or $500,000 of long-term care protection, and you can always get it back out. There's life insurance policies, like what I own, that has a long-term critical illness feature that says, hey, if you need this, you can accelerate your death benefit up to $1 million. Well, if it costs me $100,000 or $150,000 a year, and I've got $1 million of money that I could use, and that's what I'm going to use, then, you know, that's a way you could use it and then do some planning and wait that five-year clock out, as an example. So I guess the thing I should tell people is that there's a lot of things that you can do now to make sure that you're well prepared in the future. And Lance, you've seen well prepared people, somewhat prepared people, and a lot of, unfortunately, very ill prepared people.
Right. And yeah, planning in advance is key. And you know, if the I would say it's never too late to do something. You know, even in what we call a crisis case, if somebody is headed, you know, headed to the nursing home, there's still legal things that we can do to help preserve assets, but definitely planning ahead is key.
So Lance Like, you're going to hear it again next week at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Give my friend Lance a call. They're taking appointments, 812-323-8300. All right, let's take a break. Come back and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Lance, thanks for being on the show, brother.
Thanks.
It's been a lot of fun, very informative. If anyone caught just a portion of the show and like, oh, man, I wanted to hear it all, well, guess what? After the Thursday night airing, it will be live on WGCLRadio.com. Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock is the replay, and after it goes live tonight, it will show up as Your Money with David Hayes podcast wherever you get your podcast. Go to Apple, whatever. Go to Spotify. It is there. And while you're there, don't forget to listen to 2025, the final drive, What You Need to Know to Win. I'm getting ready to lay down another one, maybe even today, that will air in a couple of weeks. So listen to the one with Martin James that just went out on Monday. Yeah, so people have been enjoying them. We're having over 1,000 unique downloads whenever a new one comes out. So we're rolling hard there. It's a lot of fun. Next week, David McKnight, we're going to be doing a Zoom with him on the radio show, and then he's going to share that on his podcast YouTube channel as well, so he's fired up about that. And then the next week, Ryan McNown, he's one of my guys from my Ed Slot group, also a podcaster and radio guy. He's a lot of fun, very knowledgeable. So good lineup, like I told you, a big powerhouse lineup. But again, if you miss any of the program, get on the website tonight, WGCLRadio.com, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock while you're driving around on a beautiful day. Indiana's playing Maryland that day, but what, we have Farmer's Market, we have some big festival, I don't even know what's going on right now. I saw a big tent going up on 7th Street, but I probably should know that. But I don't really care because I'm going to go to Lake Lemon and hang out there for the weekend. And the Colts game on Sunday, we've got a big Colts game. I believe the Rams were playing, so I'll be up there on Sunday afternoon for that. So anyway, a lot going on as always. Going to be a beautiful rest of the week and weekend. So enjoy it, everyone. And again, thanks to Lance Like for being on the show. We're going to have him back on a regular basis. It's just too much information to cram in too little bit of time. So again, have a great one, everyone. I'll be back next week with David McKnight, the Power Zero guy. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Have a great one. Bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.